Hello and welcome to Primary Viewpoints from Patient Care Online, a monthly podcast that features informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about what impacts primary care medicine today. I'm your host, Cindy Jennings, editor at Patient Care Online. In this episode, Dr. Alina Elperin joins us to discuss preventive cardiology and obesity. Dr. Elperin is an internist and obesity medicine specialist in Evanston, Illinois, as well as a clinical assistant professor at the University of Chicago Pritzker School of Medicine.
Could you describe the range of associations between obesity and cardiovascular disease, from obvious ones to perhaps some that may go unnoticed?
So cardiovascular disease is probably the most important disease that we try to prevent in all patients, regardless whether a patient has obesity or not, being that cardiovascular disease is the number one killer of Americans and really people worldwide. So preventing cardiovascular disease is our number one priority. In patients with obesity, unfortunately, the risk of heart disease or stroke or other vascular disease is considerably higher than in patients without obesity. And I view obesity as one of those umbrella risk factors where it in itself causes other independent risk factors for heart disease. What I'm trying to say is some of the usual risk factors for cardiovascular disease is hypertension, hyperlipidemia, obstructive sleep apnea, among certain others. And obesity, unfortunately, is that umbrella problem that can lead to all of the ones that I've just mentioned, including, of course, one of the major ones, which is blood sugar abnormalities, ranging from insulin resistance, prediabetes, to type 2 diabetes. So preventing obesity or helping to treat obesity appropriately really helps control all the major risk factors that play a role in cardiovascular disease.
And what are the most important preventive cardiology strategies in primary care for patients with obesity?
Absolutely. So I think the number one thing to kind of think of in our patients with obesity is two different categories of disease. So one category is we see fat mass disease, meaning the extra fat tissue causing compression or complications due to just the quantity of the fat. So some of the fat mass disease that's associated with cardiovascular disease is obstructive sleep apnea. So obstructive sleep apnea presents itself as snoring, and it is occlusion of the airflow when patients are asleep. In patients with obesity, because of extra soft tissue in the neck, when a patient lies down, they have airway obstruction, which can cause obstructive sleep apnea. So with the recent ACE recommendations, also putting a focus on sleep apnea diagnosis, I would say for all our primary care doctors treating patients with obesity, I highly recommend screening for obstructive sleep apnea and diagnosing and treating obstructive sleep apnea. So that's one of the fat mass diseases we talk about. There are others, but more like arthritis and joint disease, which is not as pertinent to cardiovascular risk. The other category we focus on quite a bit is the metabolic disease. And this is, again, a major concern that I want all our primary care doctors to be on alert about, because this is what leads to cardiovascular disease. So for all patients with obesity, I think very important to screen for things like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, blood sugar abnormalities that I described earlier. And once a year, I highly recommend our patients be screened for liver function, because as we know, insulin resistance and obesity are a leading cause for non-alcoholic steatohepatitis or liver disease, which is now the number one reason why patients in the United States go into liver failure. So screening for liver function abnormalities once a year is also essential in our patients with obesity to help prevent metabolic disease associated with obesity.
What are the most common cardiovascular complications you see in patients with obesity?
Absolutely. I think the most common one tends to be hypertension. That is common in all our patients as we get older and as our blood vessels get stiffer. But certainly in patients with obesity, hypertension happens earlier in life. It can be more severe and a little bit more aggressive. And as a result of hypertension, which we really need to diagnose and treat aggressively, we see other complications, such as an enlargement of the heart, which can lead to heart failure, which is another, unfortunately, common problem that our patients with obesity have. Other problems in cardiovascular health that are more common in patients with obesity are heart rhythm problems, primarily atrial fibrillation, which certainly many of us know and treat. Atrial fibrillation is when the heart quivers as opposed to contracting regularly, which increases risk for a blood clot formation in the heart. And a blood clot can travel and cause a stroke, which is a dreaded complication of atrial fibrillation. So thinking about the symptoms of atrial fibrillation, palpitations, shortness of breath, lightheadedness, screening for it, and being on alert for atrial fibrillation is also something really important in our patients with obesity. And again, diagnosing obstructive sleep apnea, that is really key. We need to talk to our patients about the quality of their sleep, whether they snore, whether their partner has ever heard them stop breathing or joking, gasping at night. Those can be symptoms of obstructive sleep apnea. So talk to your patients about it and refer them for testing, because obstructive sleep apnea alone can also increase risk for hypertension, which, like I said, is common in our patients with obesity. So we do have to keep all of those things in mind.
And what type of medications should primary care clinicians be prepared to prescribe to help prevent cardiovascular disease and other complications in patients with obesity?
Absolutely. I think it's primary care doctors or other clinicians. The first thing I want to say about medications is please always conduct a thorough review of the patient's current medications, right? This is essential because so many medications that our patients take can cause weight gain. I'll just name some of the common ones that I know my patients are surprised at hearing. A daily antihistamine, when taken chronically for allergies, which is very, very common, can cause weight gain. Yes. Not many people know that, but that's one of those things where you can easily try to help patients with some topical therapies or limit the antihistamine use for short term to help decrease the risk of medication-induced weight gain. Other medications that can cause weight gain are steroids, right? If someone has, you know, takes a Medrol dose pack frequently for asthma or for joint pains, if you do that repeatedly, then you risk weight gain. Other medications that can contribute to weight gain are certain psychiatric medications, certain antidepressants, certain antipsychotic medications. Certainly, I always talk to my patients about mental health being priority. But we do talk about it because there are some antidepressants that are less weight gain promoting and some that are more weight gain promoting. And I often work with patients or their other mental health providers to decrease medication-related weight gain. There are many other medications that can cause weight gain, so I just listed a few, but I do want to emphasize for our primary care doctors, please, please review your patient's medication list and try to see if there's anything that could be modified that can help avoid further weight gain. In terms of specific medications to help with obesity for the primary care providers, certainly we have our anti-obesity medicines, which I really urge all our primary care providers to be familiar with how to use those and what those medicines are. There are several FDA-approved medications. Some of them can be generic and affordable, and some unfortunately not. So I'll mention a few. Qsymia, combination of phentermine topiramate, is one medication that can be used. Contrave, which is a combination of Wellbutrin and naltrexone, is another one. And then there's our GLP-1 agonist medications, such as Saxenda and Wegovy, which are FDA approved. There are several others, but I think these are the ones that primary care doctors really need to be familiar with, because even if you're not a prescriber, you're probably going to be seeing your patients taking these medicines more and more. Secondly, certainly if you're uncomfortable or unfamiliar with treating obesity with medication, please, 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 please feel free to reach out to obesity specialists. There's more physicians and other clinicians that are training to get to be specialists in obesity. And I think your patients will benefit greatly from seeing somebody that is specialized in treating obesity. But as we mentioned earlier, I think it is absolutely in the primary care doctor's wheelhouse, so to speak, to treat all the metabolic disease that comes with obesity. So I urged everybody earlier to screen for metabolic disease with blood sugar testing, cholesterol testing, sleep apnea testing, liver function testing. This is where some of our medications come to play. Certainly statin medications that help lower cholesterol and reduce cardiovascular risk in our patients is essential. So we test cholesterol, we calculate patient's individual risk for cardiovascular risk, and then we treat as appropriate with statins. Another medication certainly are all our medication for diabetes and pre-diabetes. In patients with obesity and pre-diabetes, I would urge primary care physicians to think about metformin. Metformin is an old medication that we use for diabetes. We sometimes forget about being able to use it for pre-diabetes and obesity because treating insulin resistance really can help people lose a few pounds, which is very, very helpful. Certainly treating blood pressure as another major risk factor is very important in our patients. There's some antihypertensive medications that can actually promote weight gain, which is something I will warn primary care doctors about. Certain beta blockers like metoprolol, which is a common one used, can actually promote insulin resistance and weight gain. So I always remind our primary care doctors that beta blockers are really not first line for hypertension management, unless there's certainly another disorder that a patient has that warrants a beta blocker use, an arrhythmia or prior history of heart attack. But I would urge diuretics be used for blood pressure management, calcium channel blockers be used for blood pressure in our patients with obesity, our ACE inhibitors and aldactone inhibitors also can be very helpful. You know, most recently, the SGLT2 inhibitor medications like your empagliflozin, dapagliflozin have been fantastic for patients with obesity because as you lose sugar through the urine, patients lose a few pounds also. And we know that there's actually some evidence for cardiovascular risk reduction with these medicines. So I think that could be a great one for blood sugar control. It can help, again, lose a few pounds. And we do see a little bit of a blood pressure improvement with these medicines. So those are to name a few. I do want to emphasize that talking to our patients about lifestyle habits is essential in treating both obesity and preventing cardiovascular disease. You know, there are many things we can do to lower blood pressure naturally, like exercise and lowering sodium in our diet. Treating obstructive sleep apnea also will lower our patients' blood pressure. So I do want us to absolutely think about lifestyle measures too. I don't want to forget stress reduction and quality sleep habits are also essential as parts of the lifestyle management that we do. Certainly one of the more difficult things to talk about to patients is about diet and nutrition plans. When I say difficult, I just mean it can be tricky because of how individualized our approach needs to be and how sensitive we should be to our patients' cultural preferences and individual lifestyles and nutritional needs. In terms of nutrition, there are many different diets out there. And I do want to emphasize that for patients with obesity, that the best type of dietary plan, I don't even like to call it a diet, I like to call it a nutrition plan, is one that the patient is able to stick with. I always talk to my patients about, we can eat as restrictively as possible or go on any crazy fad diet as possible, and you'll be successful in losing weight for however long you're able to maintain that diet. But as soon as you say, I've had enough of this, I can't live my life like this, and you go back to your previous eating patterns, weight does come back on. So what I would advise primary care clinicians to do is, first of all, talk to your patients about their styles of eating. I think taking the time and talking to patients about, hey, what time is your breakfast? How often do you skip breakfast? Do you eat a snack between breakfast and lunch or lunch and dinner? What time is your lunch and dinner? Do we have a nighttime snack? Do you ever wake up in the middle of the night and snack in order to go back to sleep? These are really essential questions to ask. And unless you ask, you just won't know. I also always ask if a patient has a particularly long commute to work, whether they stop at a drive-thru and whether they eat in the car. So I think the most important thing to tailor our dietary recommendations is really understanding your patient's patterns of eating and then helping them make very small and gradual and hopefully sustainable changes in their eating pattern. So I don't like to call it a diet. I don't name it per se to patients. I know that in the literature, the Mediterranean diet is sort of the gold standard for lowering cardiovascular risk. And we know the Mediterranean diet is full of healthy protein, lean protein, fish, poultry, lots of fruit and vegetable, and moderate consumption of whole grains, starches. So instead of calling it what it is, I sort of do that with my patients already by individualizing based on their habits. I do want to say in our patients with obesity and metabolic disease, such as high cholesterol, we often see a high triglyceride count and a low HDL, which is a good cholesterol. And the best type of dietary pattern for patients with high triglycerides, low HDL is a reduced carbohydrate diet. That tends to be my go-to, probably even over Mediterranean diet, although I don't call it either one. And the reason why a low carbohydrate diet is my preferred plan is because most patients with extra weight do have some blood sugar abnormalities. They're somewhere on that spectrum between insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes, and lowering carbohydrate intake can really be helpful with that. So, my goal as an obesity physician is to meet patients where they are in their eating patterns, work on that lots of lean protein and olive oils, nuts, and definitely work on lowering processed carbohydrate, with a goal to create a very sustainable, lifelong pattern of eating. And sometimes we make really small changes. Like, hey, let's talk about that Starbucks drive-through. What drink do you drink at Starbucks? Can we ask for half the syrup? Can you ask them for a sugar-free version of it? So you meet where patients where they are, and you really work on them to make a diet choice that fits their lifestyle.
And also, could you maybe talk about the importance of the collaboration between primary care clinicians and specialists?
Absolutely. So I wear both hats, where I'm both an internist and a primary care physician to many patients, and I act as a specialist on the obesity medicine side for many of my physician clinician colleagues as a specialist. And I find that the most benefit for the patient is really when we work together. Primary care providers know their patients best, and I often lean on them to tell me a detail here and there, a medicine that's tried before, or really learning more about the patients from them. And we work together to come up with a medication plan for obesity for patients together. I always communicate back with my primary care colleagues and say, hey, we started this, or we're considering taking this off, or what do you think about this? Would you consider doing that? So we talk to each other all the time. I collaborate with psychiatry colleagues all the time, again, because we know that medication for mental health can contribute to weight gain. Sometimes we refer patients to exercise physiologists, especially if there is significant mobility impairment, to help come up with a safe exercise plan for patients. We work a lot with our sleep specialist experts, again, in the diagnosis and treatment of sleep disorders. So there's really a lot of back and forth. And I do find that we're all, our mutual goal is for patients to live their healthiest lives, and working together really is imperative to helping patients. And patients are incredibly grateful when they know that, hey, my obesity medicine doctor talked to my primary care doctor, or they know that, they've notified my psychiatrist about, a potential change here and there. So I think patients really appreciate that also.